The next speaker here is a greater man than I, Paul Fromm, and he is it's reason enough for me to... Paul? Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. Now, I flew out from Santa Monica, California. I've traveled all over the country to different events with Paul. Paul and I do radio shows in the middle of the night, and we've done them for years. Sometimes very moving, sometimes very silly. Paul has an organization called the Canadian Association for Freedom of Expression and CAFE in Canada. And that Canadian Association for Free Expression, Paul, how many years have you had that?
Since 1981.
And Paul has Paul's fight for free expression is so inspiring and has been so great that it's actually affected our fight for freedom of speech here in the United States.
Yes.
That's an extraordinary record. Paul looks like a young man. Maybe he is. But can you imagine having kept up from 1981? And some of you have been married that long. That's an equal achievement.
Yes, sir.
But Paul, that's an extraordinary thing. So may I introduce Paul Fromm?
Well, I want to thank Jamie Kelso, and he's really far too modest. Stormfront Radio wouldn't be the dynamic vehicle it is today if it weren't for Jamie's work. Night after night, he's on 7 nights a week. He helps coordinate other people. And one of the things that I think has made Stormfront Radio the modest contributor it has been to our cause is its consistency. I mean, it's there. And that's one of the things that so often fly-by-night or well-intentioned organizations fail to deliver, a certain consistency. And that requires dogged determination. And Jamie not only has that determination, but the good spirits. I mean, he really is a positive, energizing force. And I could see the way you responded to him that you recognize that, too. So to my friend, Jamie. I want to pick up on a theme that I guess a number of speakers have touched, particularly Jason Robb. But before that, I'd like to give you just a little bit of a anecdotal update on the free speech battle in Canada, because it does affect. Jamie was quite right. The enemy we face, largely the Zionist enemy in both countries, wants to shut free speech down. The only problem they have in the United States is they have this obstruction called the First Amendment. It's not a human cowardice. Allows you to do an end run around that too. You know, laws are only as good as the men and women of the country. And I'll get back to that in a sec. But we've got some good news. I'm really happy not to always talk about gloom and doom. In the last 2 years, there's been a turnaround in public sentiment about freedom of speech in Canada, particularly in the battle over the internet. We have internet censorship imposed by the Canadian Human Rights Commission. Our organization was involved in a 6-year battle. I mean, these cases are not, you know, as you see on Law and Order, bang, 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 and they're over in 20 minutes with some time for some commercials. This case dragged on for 6 years. Anyway, we pulled off a first. Last September the 2nd, we won. The first... first time a victim has ever won an internet censorship case in Canada, and this was the big one. This wasn't just an individual case. We had challenged the law as being unconstitutional, and we won it. Now, okay, that's the good news, but as I say, these legal cases never end. Now on to the next form. Within a month, the Canadian Human Rights Commission had appealed well, actually, it's not an appeal. It's called a judicial review, because now we go out of a tribunal to a real honest-to-goodness judge. That may not be any better, but certain rules do hold there. Not just anything can be accepted as evidence. So we're slightly better off, and this time we go in with momentum. We got the law thrown out as unconstitutional. Now the Human Rights Commission is going to go to this judge and say the tribunal was incorrect in its decision. We think we're going to win. Of course, this means more money and more time, but it really is a worthwhile fight. Now, that's kind of the good news. Public opinion polls show the momentum swinging in our direction, and for very complicated reasons, even the minority-dominated press is in favor of free speech, at least in this area. So there's been a tremendous whacking of the forces of censorship. In fact, I'll tell you just one story. Now, how many of you have heard of Ann Coulter? Well, you know, I don't like to knock any good-looking white woman, but I mean, Ann Coulter has a motor mouth and a bicycle brain.
Yeah.
She likes the taste of her feet. She also likes the taste of money. But anyway, for what it's worth, Ann Coulter's she's fun and she's good at the easy targets like slagging Democrats and slagging Arab terrorists. Okay, those are easy targets. When Ann's prepared to talk about the third world invasion of the United States, that's the moment I'm going to get excited. But anyway, the story is this: a group of conservative students. Now, not conservatives as you and I know the term, but it's a political party called the Conservatives, which is about like your country club Republicans. They invited her about 10 days ago to speak at the University of Ottawa. Now, so leftist is the University of Ottawa that it's called the U of Zero, you know, like the U of O. It's called the U of Zero. So, you have to keep this in mind. Now, Ann Coulter, as we know, is so soft core, she's just soft. But she's, I guess, funny and outrageous and given to exaggeration. Well, there was a collective heart attack. You would have thought Eva Braun and the late great Adolf Hitler were about to appear. There was widespread student agitation, and there's going to be protests. And then the vice provost. Now, I don't know what, I thought that was a guy who just basically organized the graduation ceremonies. I since discovered that the vice provost makes $167,000 a year, so he must be one heap important dude. He issued a letter to Ann Coulter advising her that she was in Canada and she might not be aware that our laws were somewhat different. And he went on to say that well, of course we're all in favor of freedom of speech and we really welcome dialogue, but we want it very civil and restrained. And you're not in Canada. You're not allowed to make comments that will promote hatred against identifiable groups. Well, actually, the $167,000 man doesn't even get the law right. It's quite okay to promote hatred against people like you, white people. Yeah. It's also quite okay to promote hatred against people like us, Christians. It's also quite okay to promote hatred against Germans and Slavs.
Yes.
And political parties, too. The poor $167,000 overpaid fool didn't even have the law right, but generally, you know, okay. So a bit of a warning, and he went on to say that he hoped that she would contribute to a civil discussion where all points of view can be heard and there can be rational dialogue. Well, in other words, saying, shut up!
Yeah.
Well, that helped agitate what might have been perhaps 50 or 60 you know, of the usual rent a mob, you know, the ones with bones in their noses and so on. But by the time the night of her speech arrived, the mob, depending on which newspaper account you look at, ranged anywhere from 300 to 2,000. I know that's a big range, but anyway, it was a whole bunch of people. And so they were outside the hall, pounding on the doors. And there's one newspaper photograph. I figure some censor must have been asleep. There is a Negro with a mouth the size, and I'm not kidding it. I'm not kidding you. I'm not saying it to be nasty. The size of a baboon, with shiny white teeth and long incisors, like greeting like this, making a face like this. So this is the voice of reason and moderation and dialogue on campus. Well, okay, so you've got a mob. Ann Coulter's been warned, and it's now about half an hour before the meeting. They expected 300 people, at least 1,000 were trying to get in. These are legitimate people trying to get in to hear the meeting, not to protest. Well, what happens? Well, the university, remember Mr. Houle said that he was in favor of dialogue, but it just had to be very moderate and reasonable with respect for everybody. Well, his campus cops, they weren't up to much. The city cops, they took one look at this crowd and decided it would somehow interfere with their break at the local donut shop. And so they advised the organizers of the meeting to cancel it. And canceled the meeting was. Although the official ideology and the president of the university had said after the fact when all the doo-doo started hitting the fan that, of course, a core value of our university is freedom of speech. Well, not much of a core value. Their own campus cops saw the grinning apes and ran, and the police whom we pay very well to serve and protect, which means serve the Attorney General and protect your pension plan. Not
yes.
So freedom of speech lost the battle, but it did not win the war. That man has become famous across Canada. Houle is pretty much now known as Houle the Fool. His comments broadcast all over the place, and there's been a real debate. So as I say, I wish it had been over somebody more important than Ann Coulter. I wish it had been over Representative Dr. David Duke or somebody with some substance. But nonetheless, that gives you a little bit of a flavor that there's a real battle on up there, and we are making progress. I'm going to talk a little bit about sex today, because comes up a lot in the attack by human rights commissions. Now, you may have to help me with this, because I thought I was reasonably informed, but things get more complicated by the day. There's a fellow in St. Catharines, Ontario, and if you're a little bit geographically uncertain, that's about 10 miles over the American border from Niagara Falls. So this fellow owns a women's health club, and about 2 years ago he got a phone call, and a fairly obvious male voice said, how do I go about getting a membership? Well, the fellow said, you come in and fill an application form and so on. So not very long afterwards, this person showed up, and this person seemed to be a male. And the fellow said, well, this is a female-only health club, and there are clubs for men, co-ed clubs as well, but we're just for women. Well, he said he is in the process of being transgendered. And the others say transsex. Now, this is where I get really, really confused. I'm not quite sure what's going on here, but I take it perhaps he's going from Pat to Patricia, but I'm not quite clear. Anyway, when you're governed by a doctrine of idiocy, all sorts of idiotic things can happen. So the fellow said, "Well, he's becoming a woman or something. He's being transgendered, and so he wanted to join." Well, the owner said, "You'd be welcome as a woman, but you're still kind of a man, and the ladies are going to get a little upset, in the change room." Oh well. Well, he said, "I'll forget about it if you give me $10,000. You see what it is—a shakedown." He said, "No, Next thing he knows, he's got a complaint from the Ontario Human Rights Commission. Pat becoming Patty or whatever it is has a problem. It has been discriminated against on the basis of its being transgendered. Once again, the offer was made. In fact, the man's own lawyer said, look, pay the shakedown. Because if you go to court, hearing, it will cost you a couple $100,000. Well, this man just happened to be stubborn. And he said, no, on a matter of principle, I'm not going to. Well, it has cost him a couple of $100,000. The case has not yet been resolved. This is an example of the sort of tyranny where we give power of equality to freaks. Now there's a female, she's a lesbian actually, out at a comic club in Vancouver, out on the West Coast, and she went to a performance, and she and her fellow lesbian were kissing, and the comedian, it's impromptu comedy. The comedian started making fun of it. He said, "Oh, I see the two dykes in the corner are necking or something." Now they had been heckling him. So anyway, out of all this comes another human rights complaint because he allegedly had discriminated against them for being a lesbian and so on. So that's the type of thing that's going on. And we quite clearly see forces that are absolutely opposed to our basic values essentially in control. But we are making progress. That's the good news. Okay, I wanted to step back a little bit and I asked myself why we are in such a terrible state. When I look at the numbers, look at those battles. I really love that video that Pastor Tom Robb has put together. I mean, that clip from Zulu just about had me on my feet. Did you notice that those men, I know it's just acting, but it was true, they weren't afraid of those Negroes. And they had every right to be. There were 15,000 of them. I think there were fewer than 200. Jamie Kelso can correct me on that, but there were fewer than 200 redcoats. Sure, they had modern guns, but those Zulus had those assegai spears and shields. They knew the land, and there were 15,000 of them. Anyway, but those men were not afraid because they believed in themselves and they believed in their cause. Amen. What was that song? Men of Harlech. There was a racial solidarity there. Amen. Same thing in Braveheart. Now, it's my friend, lawyer Doug Christie, who's the big expert on that. But as I understand it, they faced a far more experienced, more organized, and maybe even better generaled British army that also had English army that also had cavalry. But those wild Scotsmen, they certainly won the first battle. And notice how they believed in themselves. So I ask myself, why are we in such a bad state? Now you folks, the white folks, are still 61% of your population. And all the grim warnings are right. Somewhere around 2042, 2041, somewhere in that area, you're going to fall into minority status. In my country, probably around by 2050, maybe a little earlier. But we're still the majority. We're still a reasonably substantial majority. Why are we in such a bad state? Why are we so few? Why is this meeting being held here rather than in the Superdome? There are a number of reasons, but I'd like to suggest three things that we need. One thing that we do not have is white pride. The difference between those several hundred British soldiers and those several thousand Scotsmen and most Americans and Canadians today is a lack of pride. They had the pride. They knew who they were. Most of our people do not have pride and do not know who they are. So the first step, I think, in taking back our continent is white pride. Now, yeah. white pride is more than just shouting white power. It's more than a slogan. It has to be here and here. And that's where you can help. You can work one-on-one with other people, people in your family, your children, your grandchildren, your relatives, your co-workers. It doesn't have to be preachy. It doesn't have to be sloganeering. We have to free our brothers and sisters from at least 50, but probably almost 100 years of lies and propaganda and distortion, much of it coming from our longtime Zionist enemies. Yeah. The lies that have been told about our people, the lies that people believe that have robbed them of their pride. You know, when I see a situation like Tiger Woods, I promise I wouldn't talk about sex anymore, but okay. I'm not sure that's sex. That's just probably just rotting, but you know what I find sad? Tiger Woods, he's simply being... I don't expect any different. Well, what I find pathetic, though, is that beautiful Swedish woman that married him.
Yes.
I mean, is there a wind tunnel between those two pretty ears? Well, no. She's a Swede. And they have been brought up on self-hating, anti-racism since the Second World War. That poor girl maybe didn't know any better.
Yeah.
And, you know, if your education system doesn't tell you, and your religion doesn't tell you, and your media tells you race mixing is great, if your parents don't tell you, well, unless you've got good instincts, and some people don't have good instincts, how do you ever get to learn? So where we have to begin is white pride, and that means undoing the self-hatred that people have been taught. I used to be in the education racket, so I know it from the inside. One of my colleagues was almost as cynical as I am. He taught history, and one day I said, "Okay, so what are you teaching in history today?" He says, "I don't teach history." I said, "Yeah, you do." "Oh no," he says, "Nah, a little bit of women's studies, a little bit of labor studies, some native studies, some minority studies." He said, "We don't teach history anymore. It's just a bunch of whining minority groups all complaining about the same thing, white people." So, what does the average graduate of most American and Canadian high schools know about our culture, our heritage, by the time they graduate high school? They would know, let me think, we enslaved the blacks, we holocausted the Jews, we dispossessed the native people, we raped the environment, and I guess maybe we have bad breath. So those are the achievements of European civilization. Well, would you want to be proud of that? I mean, when I've talked to people who say, "Well, why would I? What's so big about being white? I mean, what's there to be proud of?" And I think, you know, that this person isn't some communist. This person is a brain abused individual. This person is every bit as much a victim as a battered child. In fact, what is done in the education system. What is done in the education system today is the mental equivalent of kiddie diddling, as far as I'm concerned. The abuse people is inflicted on our young people, when they are lied to, every one of those accusations I mentioned to you is either an outright lie or so distorted as to be meaningless. I mean, just to take slavery, for instance, just a little factoid, there are more slaves in the world today than there were in 1865. And slavery was abolished by the white race. We'd outgrown it for whatever reasons. We abolished it. It's still thriving in Africa. I talked to an old Africa hand. She and her husband were in northern Nigeria in the early 60s, and she said, "There are places in northern Nigeria where everybody knows there's a slave market. Back when we were there and today, nothing has changed. But who gets the blame for it? We do." Okay, we have to work, and I think it has to be done. This is a guerrilla warfare. It has to be done one-on-one. We have to show our brothers and sisters, you've got every reason to be proud, legitimately proud. And legitimately proud isn't, I'm great because I'm white and you're, and somebody else is stupid because they're black or something else. It's not a matter I'm better because you're worse. It's we're better because of our tremendous achievement. Whether you want to talk about music or art or architecture or science, every one of those, these are no-brainers. 95% of all of the inventions have been made by white people. We may be, you know, 15% of the world's population. We never were more than 20%. We basically own it all in terms of inventions. The architecture, the music, you know, whether you're a country and western fan like me or a person into folk music, or whether was Beethoven one of the Beatles? Well, if you're into that classical music stuff, it doesn't matter. You contrast our music with, you know, the stuff from Haiti. Come on, there's another no-brainer. Anyway, we have to, through all the means at our disposal, free our brothers and sisters from guilt. Now, I'm not saying we're going to reach everybody, but we should reach a sizable minority. Now, fortunately, it's not just guerrilla warfare where we work individually on people, but we've got the internet, we've got radio, some elements of television. We've got a lot of media resources that I think we've got to start focusing on that, and that's something positive. Okay, so once we have white pride, the next step is, and it's been hinted at by some of the other speakers today, is white unity. Not only religious unity, but white unity. I like the drama that the Rachel staged with the flags. And I noticed that even the most aggressive people were somewhat reluctant to go poking across the aisle. I know we didn't want to wreck the meeting hall here and knock out the fan blades, but nonetheless, there was a certain reluctance even to play joust because we're brothers.
Amen.
Now, we haven't always acted that way, and we know about the religious wars in Europe and so on, and we know about the genocidal two world wars that were fought for the masters of war and the bankers, where white men slaughtered white men for the benefit of, well, not white men. Okay, so out of white pride will come white unity. And that's why I certainly appreciate Pastor Rob's reaching out to people. I don't think you ever asked Jamie Kelso, you know, Jamie, what's your religion or what's your stand on this or that? Pastor Rob is a practitioner of no enemy on the right, of building unity. And that's what we have to have. And then, as long as we are still the numerical majority, From white pride to white unity to white power. And when that happens, watch out. Watch out. Now, I think we've got our enemies perhaps have more finely tuned antenna than we do. Why is there this sudden announcement that there are radical groups all across the country? The great expert, I guess Alabama is somewhere over that direction, in Montgomery. This is the Southern Poverty Law Council. I think they're only about 50% honest. There's nothing very Southern about them except where they are. The only poverty they're fighting is their own. Law, they have nothing to do with law. I guess they're a conference or council, I suppose. But anyway, I saw the one of their major motor mouths, Mark Potok, who I think... I don't think he's a Christian. Anyway, I saw Mark Potok on CNN yesterday and telling us that there are at least 300 new radical right-wing militia, you know, just a whole lot of slogans, type groups, and they are the thing is they're motivated by the changing demographics, and because there is an African American in the White House. And I thought, well, you know, 50% of the, you know, yeah, that's not too bad for, I guess, telling the truth. Changing demographics. I'd like to think he's right. Now, what he isn't spelling out is the Third World is invading the United States. Yeah. Your armies are off fighting wars for Israel in Iraq and Afghanistan. Meanwhile, your southern border is being invaded. Yep. The history will scratch its head. That the most powerful military force in the world today is being taken by essentially an unarmed invasion across its southern border. They're going to ask, did they hang all the generals? That's beyond belief, but that's happening. But I think a lot of Americans, like Canadians, are waking up and saying, this isn't our country anymore. I love what Rachel was showing, the show and tell, the children's book, learning material from the 1950s. Yes. We all recognize that was our country. What happened? It wasn't a foreign invasion. The Chinese didn't take us with guns. The Russians didn't win the Cold War. It wasn't the North Koreans. It wasn't Saddam Hussein. It was treachery at the very top. We want our country back. We want our continent back. Yeah. We want this to once again be the continent of the founding settler European people who look like you and me. Yeah. The second part of Potok's comment, though, was of course a cheap shot. And probably contained a grain of truth that he didn't understand. He said, oh, well, these people are angry because there's an African-American in the White House. well, he is African.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. He was born in Kenya. Yeah. But anyway, it's, you know, not, jab, you're all bigots. The opposition movements, the Tea Parties, these groups, these so-called militias, all these other groups that are springing up, they are equally critical of the Republican Party. This isn't a... I see some of the literature, I see some of the chatter on the internet. What I am not hearing is, oh yeah, we've got this Negro in the White House, we want to get him out so we can get another George Bush in. That's not what people are saying. So, yes, Obama is important, but not for the reason Potok said. I was at a conference of the Council of Conservative Citizens. I'm a member. I'm one of their directors. And I guess I better put in a free plug. If you'd like to join this membership organization, I do have forms for you at the back. Anyway, we had our conference last June in Jackson, Mississippi, and I'm not sure who the first speaker was, but he set the theme. And he looked at the audience and he said, what you people have to understand is you're not in charge anymore. We're not in charge anymore. And I thought that was a very interesting and very powerful theme. Yes. The election of Barack Hussein Obama to the presidency finally woke up a lot of Americans to the fact that we are not in charge anymore. Now, We haven't been in charge for quite a while. The Bushes and the Clintons and the Bush before them and the Carters, they have looked like you and I, but they do not represent our interests. But now with Obama, it's obvious. It's visually obvious. It's very difficult to deny it. And from that point of view, it really is helpful to know we're not in charge anymore. And then you think, but wait, we're the majority. Why aren't we in charge? That, I think, is what's beginning to motivate people to get involved and to say, yes, we have to take this country back.
Amen.
I'm not a fan of mindless rah-rah, but I'm also not a fan of doom and gloom. I think we really want to be realistic about where we stand. Now, a person who does a lot of research for me, of course, goes through internet news stories, most of them from the mainline press, some from unusual sources, but she's telling me that you wouldn't believe how angry the comments are in Canada, and I suspect in the States too. On immigration stories in many newspapers, there's a chance online to post your reactions. And so she'll read the story, and then the reactions. And even I had trouble believing how angry people are. And these are people that are using sources that would be considered normally liberal or leftist. In fact, I would think most of the people that would access it online would be tend to be to the middle or to the left of the political spectrum. There was what I would almost call a ho-hum. We read this type of story before just the other day. And it was about an English couple. And they'd come to Canada on a temporary work permit. They had been led to believe that if they set down roots, it would look very good for them, and they would be able to apply for permanent landed status. And so they did all those things. The husband had a good job. They got their kids enrolled into school. They were taking part in community activities. They bought a home. All the good things. Did I mention they had jobs? Did I mention they weren't on welfare? Yeah. Did I mention they didn't commit any crimes? So all the ideal potential citizen. And then they got two letters from the Department of Immigration telling them that their work permit was about to run out and they were expected to vacate the country. And a second letter going to the 11-year-old girl telling her that as of like 3 or 4 days from the newspaper story, she would be illegally in the country and she would not be allowed to go to school anymore. And while there's an appeal going on and so on. As I say, a nothing story. It happens all the time to white immigrants. The reactions would make the reactions of this group look tame. Well, if they'd been packies, they'd be allowed in, wrote one person. Yeah. It's all the color of their skin. They're white. We don't want them. We just want a bunch of lazy, drug-pushing, welfare-using people from Jamaica. And this was comment after comment after comment after comment. This wasn't just one or two, you might say, hotheads or angry people. And I'm informed that this is typical of reactions to immigration stories. People are angry and fed up. What that tells me is we have a lot of potential people out there. We have some real serious missionary work to do. So let's just kind of review. What I think has to be on the agenda for all of us, organizationally and individually, is to reach out and encourage and engender white pride in our brothers and sisters, and out of that, to bring about white unity, and out of that, white power, and we'll take this continent back.
Paul, you inspire us. Thank you.